everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Come back often. Feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera and on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. Hi, everybody. I'm Geraldo Rivera, and this is the podcast. You know, no topic on my old daytime talk show, radio talk show, engendered more negative feedback from the audience than my take on undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants in the phraseology of those who are repulsed by the fact that there are 11 million people living in this country without proper documentation. Yet I feel how I feel, and if you don't like it, don't listen, but I really believe that we need a more balanced approach to undocumented immigration and what to do about it. Right now, for example, there are chilling reports from around the nation of extraordinary activity by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, I-C-E, ICE. No word generates more terror in the heart of an undocumented immigrant than ICE, the migra, ICE, the man, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Right now, from Southern California to South Brooklyn, ICE agents have been conducting coordinated raids. They are targeting a population, mostly Latino, let's face it, which officials describe as primarily criminal illegal aliens. So ICE is targeting a population primarily consisting of criminal illegal aliens. What the hell does that mean? ICE maintains that these raids, the raids that are going on now, are nothing more or less than compliance with President Trump's campaign pledge to prioritize enforcement and to target those undocumented immigrants who represent a danger to U.S. citizens. Dangerous immigrants, criminal aliens, a danger to U.S. citizens. According to ICE, so-called criminal aliens make up between 75 and 95% of those being detained in this current flurry of raids. 75 to 95%. Now, even if that's true, even if 75 to 95% of those being detained are criminal aliens, which I guess is supposed to mean as opposed to just your run-of-the-mill undocumented immigrant, even if that's true, there is no doubt but that the heightened ICE activity has sown terror in Latino immigrant communities from coast to coast. These folks are uncertain about what this apparent crackdown means to them. There are widespread reports of immigrant families keeping their children home from public school for fear that they will be tracked home, where their parents would be apprehended and held for deportation. In Arizona, it happened. This woman, Guadalupe, the 36-year-old mother of two U.S. citizen children, two kids born in the States, Guadalupe was deported to Mexico because she was a convicted felon. But she didn't commit any crime other than using a fake Social Security card. That's the way they get work. They use fake Social Security cards. So that's a crime. That's a felony. And she was convinced to plead guilty to it using a fake Social Security card. What people have to realize is when these undocumented immigrants use fake Social Security cards, Social Security tax is deducted from their paycheck. It is deducted and it goes to these fake Social Security accounts. It isn't returned to the employee. It goes to the U.S. Treasury. It goes into the U.S. Treasury. It goes into the Social Security Trust Fund, where no one can ever take it out because the Social Security card is fake. It is a tax that they pay. It's a gift that the undocumented immigrants give to the United States in exchange for the United States turning the other cheek when it comes to their informal, undocumented immigrant status. But, you know, this whole thing about criminal aliens, there are urgent questions being asked right now by representatives of the heavily Hispanic districts in this country. It's what kind of criminal is ICE really targeting? Now, how does the deportation of Guadalupe, that Arizona housewife I just told you about, who has been in the United States, by the way, since she was 14 years old, how does her apprehension and deportation and separation from her two citizen children, how does that make America either greater or safer? Now, if the federal government really is determined to prioritize immigration enforcement and focus on the drug dealers, the killers, the robbers, the domestic abusers, the gangbangers, then why has ICE waited until now to launch this crackdown? Doesn't it make you really think, you know, I wonder, are they really going after the drug dealers, the killers, the robbers, the domestic abusers, the gangbangers? Or rather, are they going after the low-hanging fruit, women like Guadalupe? You know, people like Juan and Maria, the apricot pickers, the people who live out in the open, the pizza deliverers, the homemakers, babysitters, lawnmowers. Lawnmowerers. Rather than going after criminal aliens, the real criminal alien that you have in mind, the drug dealer, the killer, the robber, the domestic abuser, the gangbanger, are they just going after anybody, any undocumented immigrant? For example, when asked, when the DHS, when the Department of Homeland Security, of which the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is part, when the Department of Homeland Security was asked, they confirmed that the term criminal alien, not dope dealer, killer, robber, domestic abuser, gangbanger, criminal alien includes anyone who has entered the U.S. illegally or overstayed their visa or violated the terms of the visa. In other words, if they were a student on a student visa and they worked, that's a violation of the terms of the visa. According to the DHS, as construed right now in the Trump administration, a criminal alien is anyone who entered the U.S. illegally or overstayed or violated the terms of a visa. Anyone. That means, ladies and gentlemen, that the 11 million undocumented immigrants that you hear about living now in the United States, they fit that profile. They are all criminal aliens. This is totally bogus, this notion that they are prioritizing and going after the domestic abusers, the gangbangers, the robbers, the killers, the drug dealers. They're going after anyone. Anyone who has overstayed or violated the terms of their visa or entered the United States without any visa at all. 11 million people. And this heart-wrenching story of Guadalupe, the 36-year-old mother who came at the age of 14, now being separated from her citizen children, that story will be repeated over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. Now, this wave that you've just seen of arrests, that's only 680 people. The agency, the Department of Homeland Security, would not say how many of the 680 people had committed serious crimes, like drug dealing and domestic abusing and gang banging and killing and so forth. The agency would not tell anyone what percentage of the 680 actually were serious criminals. Serious criminals. They gave a sampling of 15. 15 of the 680 arrests, most of which happened, you should know, in blue cities, Los Angeles, San Antonio, Texas, Chicago, Atlanta, Georgia, New York City. You know, this to me is bait and switch. This to me is really very distressing. Do you know of the 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country living in the shadows of this country? Almost 6 million U.S.-born children live among them. So that's 6 million U.S.-born children whose lives will be totally disrupted today. by these raids. I think it's almost a dirty trick. I'm sorry, it is. To suggest you're going to be compassionate in the implementation of immigration laws and then you go out and bust up families. And you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, particularly when you remember the cities I just named, particularly New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Could this action by ICE, this re-energized ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents being re-energized, escalating their efforts against the undocumented immigrants, could this really be in retaliation for the spread of sanctuary cities and states? I wonder, are we watching the federal government now punishing the cities that have declared themselves sanctuary cities by going after undocumented immigrants willy-nilly, whoever they are, whether it's the dishwasher or the drug dealer, making no distinction, just rounding up anyone they possibly can. And you wonder, is this re-energized ICE, is this the feared deportation force that so many opponents of President Trump suggested he would mount if he won the November presidential election? You know, in this roundup that's going on right now, will ICE next target the otherwise law-abiding Dreamer kids? The Dreamer kids, you know, the Dreamers. They're enjoying deportation deferrals because they were brought to this country at a very young age, like Guadalupe. Brought to the country at a very young age through no fault of their own. Does this now current wave of ICE activity include them? You know, they are living right now in the terror of the unknown. They were pretty secure under Barack Obama. And Barack Obama was no prince when it came to undocumented immigrants. They called him the chief deporter-in-chief, Barack Obama. He deported a couple of million undocumented immigrants, most of them turned away at the border. But is the entire way of life of these Dreamer students now in jeopardy? I'm telling you, the actions of President Trump, God bless him, love the guy, old friend of mine, but his actions are generating profound uncertainty in the immigrant community right now. And that's because, I think in part, because the language that he has used to promote his immigration policies is really unnecessarily harsh. It's really unforgiving. You know, it is the kind of attitude toward these people who are really, the vast majority of them, law-abiding people who just want to make a living for their family, just want what's right. They want what you want for your family. You're going to get a backlash. You're going to get a backlash. You're already seeing it, Latino elected officials and others. Just look at the news stories of the ICE raids in the last couple of weeks. When you saw the ICE agents, heavily armored ICE agents, you know what you did not see? You did not see any local cops or state cops playing any active role in assisting the federal agents in their immigration roundup. ICE is on its own, particularly in the sanctuary cities. And that, I think, is the future of immigration enforcement throughout blue state America. If the feds want to get somebody out, an immigrant out, they're going to be doing it on their own. They're not going to get any help from the NYPD, the Chicago PD, LAPD. Just not going to get it. The front line. This will be the front line in America's culture clash coming up. It'll be our sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, sanctuary towns, sanctuary universities, sanctuary churches. All these scores of entities that have declared they will not cooperate with federal immigration authorities when it comes to the undocumented. The declaration, you should know, I mean, when the city says it's a sanctuary city, that does not mean, obviously, but I think it bears restating, that the criminals are allowed to go free. If an undocumented immigrant's committed a crime, the cop's going to arrest him. He's going to be charged under local or state law for violating the criminal law. What it means when a jurisdiction has declared itself to be a sanctuary is that local cops refuse to enforce federal immigration laws. And that's a fact, I mean, here at Fox, for instance, that causes sputtering rage among my mostly conservative colleagues. How dare these political, educational, and religious institutions defy the federal government and the federal government's righteous quest to rid the homeland of these illegal trespassers? Well, you know something, folks? There's a reason why California, Rhode Island, Vermont, Connecticut, the entire state, those states, have policies that limit cooperation with the federal government in terms of immigration. Why do most of Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State, along with 364 counties in this country and 39 major cities, including the biggest ones, New York, LA, Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., why do they have similar policies of non-cooperation? You know what the easy answer is? And this is one that's going to irk you. They have policies of non-cooperation in terms of rounding up these undocumented immigrants because they believe the majority of the people in these blue state, blue cities, in these jurisdictions, they believe that it is the right thing to do. The right thing to do, to be compassionate and to be practical when it comes to the undocumented immigrants. These communities say that they need the undocumented immigrants to be able to call 911 to report a crime or a fire or an abusive spouse, or call for an ambulance when someone has a heart attack or is hurt, be able to speak to their kid's school counselor or any other authority figure without fear of being reported to immigration authorities and then being deported. The undocumented immigrants, 1.2 million of them in the New York City metropolitan region, 1.2 million, they have to be able to call the cops. These cities have declared themselves a sanctuary for the undocumented immigrant. I tell you what, it's not because it's just the right thing to do, because the law and the Constitution of the United States are on their side. Federal courts all across this country, in at least three federal circuit courts, and I'm only talking about the First, Third, and Seventh Circuit, now the Ninth Circuit, with this ruling on President Trump's refugee ban, they certainly fall in line. So you have four federal circuit courts have found that compliance with federal immigration authorities is strictly voluntary for cities or states. Strictly voluntary. And if the federal government was to attempt to commandeer, that is to take over, to nationalize county sheriffs or local cops, to force them to work the immigration beat, that would violate a long string of legal precedents. The Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled that such a move, for example, would violate the 10th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. This deportation roundup, listen to me now, listen to Geraldo now. It's not the only punitive anti-Mexican, anti-Latino thing going on right now. This deportation roundup comes even as President Trump is pushing for his $21 billion Great Wall on the southern border, along with his promise to renegotiate NAFTA, the free trade agreement we have, to the detriment of Mexico. He thinks Mexico is getting way too sweet a deal. So he's going to build the wall. He's rounding up undocumented immigrants. He's promising to renegotiate NAFTA to the detriment of Mexico. And he also pledges to punish any U.S. business thinking of relocating from the United States to Mexico. In other words, our policy now, our national policy now, the United States national policy now is to Mexico and Mexicans, we will attack your jobs in your own country. In other words, we're going to stop U.S. manufacturers from relocating there. So we're going to attack your jobs there. And we're going to build the wall to make sure you don't sneak into the United States to steal any of our jobs. So you have a wall so the Mexicans can't get in. You have no U.S. businesses relocating in Mexico, so the Mexicans can't work in their own country for a U.S. company because Trump wants that company to only have factories in the U.S. What are those guys going to do? What's a 23-year-old former auto engineer, what's he going to do to make money for his family if he can't work in the Ford plant, the Carrier air conditioner plant? What's he going to do? I mean, I guess he could become a farmer. Plenty of those. Get a little patch. He could buy some land or, you know, become an indentured servant. He's going to get into the drug business. So yeah, that's the other, that's the competing business here. And, you know, how could the Trump administration, and again, I hold him in the highest regard, and I don't believe he has a racist or evil bone in his entire body, Donald Trump. I've known him over 40 years. But the fundamental reason that no one in the current administration speaks to or for the Latino community is that our 45th president, Donald Trump, did not see fit to name a single cabinet level or even high-ranking Latino to his inner circle. So there's no secretary of this or that who's a Latino. There's no national security aide, advisor, any high-ranking. There's no Latinos in the Trump administration White House at all. None. So you have the nation's largest minority group, 18% of the entire U.S. population, 18%. And no one in the White House to represent the Latino point of view or to advocate for them or to say, hey, maybe that whole Roundup idea, maybe we really should concentrate on gangbangers like MS-13 or the Mexican Mafia. You know, you got their social media, you know who they are. You know, no one to say just stick to them and don't go after the Guadalupes of the world. The lack of a Hispanic voice in the president's ear is one reason I think that his announced immigration policies are being greeted with fear and anger by so many. What do you do about it? You vote. You got to demand fairness, compassion, and reason through your elected officials. You know, we American Latinos also want the best for the United States of America. We deserve a voice, don't you think, in the White House? Isn't that reasonable? President Trump, it's not too late. You know, historically, the Secretary of Interior, Secretary of Labor, some Secretary of something. But you could certainly make, you know, now that all the cabinet positions are filled, even though a couple of the nominees are getting bounced back, I think that you really could make some space for 18% of the U.S. population and growing, the fastest growing and largest minority group in the country right now, Latinos. No one represents them right now in the White House. Speaking of the White House, I want to talk about what happened with General Flynn, the president's national security advisor. Use the rest of my time today to really talk about what was a grotesque, really bad error in judgment by General Flynn. What did he do? He spoke on the telephone at the end of December, during the waning weeks of the Obama administration. General Flynn, the national security advisor of President-elect Donald Trump, spoke on the phone with the Russian ambassador. What did they talk about? Remember, President-elect Trump is not sworn in. He's not the president yet. President Barack Obama is still the president in December. General Flynn goes behind Barack Obama's back, and he speaks directly to the Russians. Why? President Obama, in retaliation for Russia hacking our election, and now everybody agrees, right, left, center, red, white, blue, everybody agrees that the Russians hacked our election. In retaliation for that, Barack Obama threw out over 30 Russian spies from the Russian embassy in D.C., threw them out of the country. Classically, in the Cold War, when that happened, when we expelled diplomats from Russia, or Russia expelled diplomats from their country, the other nation would retaliate. All right, Obama throws out 35 of theirs. Russia then, historically, would throw out 35 of ours, 35 of our diplomats out of the country. That did not happen here. So everybody was speculating that Russia was figuring they would get a better deal from Donald Trump. Why? Because Donald Trump certainly benefited from the Russian hacking in terms of the election. He has shown a real fondness for Vladimir Putin, the ruthless Russian dictator. There's no doubt about that. So Russia, you know, and people surmised that Russia made a calculation that it'll get a better deal under Donald Trump. No reason now to throw out 35 American diplomats, because the sanctions that Barack Obama in the waiting weeks of his presidency imposed, well, they'll be overturned as soon as Donald Trump comes into office. I mean, that was the conventional wisdom. But that's not what happened. What happened is that General Flynn spoke directly to the Russian ambassador. Now, General Flynn says what he spoke about was the expulsion of the 35 Russian diplomats from Washington, D.C., but that he didn't otherwise speak about sanctions. That's exactly what the sanctions were. Yes, they were economic components of the sanctions, but the throwing out of these 35 guys was certainly the most dramatic aspect of the sanctions, the Barack Obama imposed sanctions on the Russians. So people are saying that Flynn deserved to lose his job because he really did talk to the Russian ambassador about sanctions. And then he lied about it to Vice President Pence, who seems like a good guy, decent guy. Lied to it to Pence. That's not the big reason that Flynn resigned, or resigned or would have been thrown out. It wasn't that people were worried that he would be blackmailed. Well, if you don't, you know, become a Russian spy, they're going to tell the Washington Post or the New York Times that you were talking to the Russian ambassador, even though you lied and said you did not talk to him. That's not the problem. The blackmail is not the problem. The problem is that General Flynn seems to have been more loyal to the Russians than to the government of the United States of America. Psst, hey, don't worry about these sanctions. This president is a loser. He's on his way out. You know, another 3-4 weeks, we'll have President Trump in there. Don't worry about these sanctions. Did General Flynn do that? Did he put his relationship with Russia and Putin above his relationship with his own country's government? With his own country's national interests? Did he undermine the authority of the sitting 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama? I mean, that is so serious. I mean, consider this. Look at David Petraeus, General David Petraeus, who I saw as a two-star general when he had command of the 101st Airborne in the invasion of Iraq. I saw him as a lieutenant general when he had control of Mosul in northern Iraq. I saw him as a four-star when he had command of all forces in Iraq and later Afghanistan and became director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He had his life ruined. He had a criminal conviction because he gossiped to his girlfriend about some of his secrets. She was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. There's no evidence that she ever leaked any of his secrets, but Petraeus got reamed for it. Which is worse, telling your girlfriend or showing your girlfriend some private stuff, a colonel in the United States Army, or talking behind the back of the president of the United States to deal directly to the Russian ambassador? I mean, doesn't that give you the creeps? Doesn't that make it seem that anything is possible? That anything in this whole Russia thing, is Russia and the relationship between Russia and the Trump campaign, is that a cancer on this presidency? Is that something that will unravel over time? And we'll find out that somebody in the Trump administration, if not the president himself, was talking to somebody in Russia, if not the Russian president himself, and saying, you know, well, let's make a deal. You do the hack and I'll do the this. I mean, doesn't it make it seem now possible? It's not like a conspiracy theory, crazy InfoWar stuff anymore. You know, the point is, General Flynn was disloyal to the President of the United States. And I think that is a damn shame. It may not be a crime. I don't know if it's a crime. But it's a damn shame. And he should be really embarrassed about it. All right, that's really all I have to say. I mean, I could talk forever, but I appreciate the fact that you tuned in and that you're listening. I'm Geraldo Rivera. I'll see you next time.